This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Walk into any of the department stores around town at the moment, and you might be mistaken for thinking that Halloween is a modern American invention. All costumes, lollies, cobwebs, but its roots actually go back thousands of years. And here in Australia, it's even taken on a life of its own. So how did it get here? Well, joining us is Professor Carol Cusack, Professor of Religious Studies at the University of Sydney. Carol, welcome to Drive.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Many Australians assume Halloween is just an American import. How far back do its roots actually go?
Well, we can look at that in two or three ways, really. There's a kind of modern commercial Halloween that you were talking about that you see in the department stores, and that's quite recent. And then there's the way Halloween works in the Christian religious calendar, which a lot of people don't think about, but it is, in fact, the night before a major Christian festival, All Saints, which is very important. But you're hoping, I think, that I'll go right back to sort of pagan Irish and Scottish society and perhaps also continental Celtic society and talk about how actually it's the New Year festival of the pagan Celtic world.
So how did it become, I suppose, to represent so many different things?
Well, the interesting thing is that the festival for the ancient and medieval Celts, which was called Samhain, New Year's Day was the 1st of November, but the Celts reckoned the day beginning at sundown the evening before, like Shabbat, the Sabbath does in modern Judaism and indeed ancient Judaism. And so the evening before that day was a very powerful time. Remember, they're in the Northern Hemisphere. It's going into winter. Mm. We're talking about pre-modern culture. So people live a pretty hard life, even people who are well off. And so there are bonfires and there's a slaughter of animals that isn't going to, the animals that aren't going to survive, or they don't have enough space to store indoors during the winter. And there's this sensation that the old year is dying, the new year is coming. It's a time of great potentiality and power. And it's also a time when the boundaries, the borders between the world of the living and the world of the dead are very weak. And so people believe that ghosts and spirits wander on the 31st of October in the night.
Oh, so that's why we're dressing up as ghosts and ghouls and running around the streets.
Strangely enough, yes. It's very different, of course, because a lot of the old legends that we discuss for Halloween from medieval Irish texts in particular, talk about things like human beings, living people, going to gallows on the roads and having conversations with corpses because the corpses had the wisdom of the dead. And when you think about the whole trick-or-treat thing, the threat is that some kind of magical trick, which could be really very bad, will get played on you, and so you give a gift to ask the witch or the ghost or the, you know, the spirit to go away. So what the corpses used to ask for was alcoholic drinks, and the living people would give them drinks in return for their wisdom about what was going on in the world of the dead.
So Carol, therefore, by locking my gate and not letting people ring my doorbell, I could be inviting the evil spirits in and not giving a treat.
I don't think so, no. Because I think, you know, firstly they'd have to actually knock on your door and you'd have to refuse them entry and you'd have to refuse them a treat. And I mean, alcoholic drinks are not the only thing. The other thing that people used to give, you know, oat cakes or bannocks were very popular, and, you know, what we would nowadays think of as fairly mundane things, but you know, in a much harsher kind of life, any kind of food or drink was very much appreciated. And so, you know, that's where it all starts. And then it goes into Christianity because All Saints is the festival that celebrates all of the holy dead, the saints who have died and are in heaven with God. So Halloween means the evening before All Hallows, and Hallows is another word for the saints, the holy.
So the is it almost as though the background, the practice, you know, the spirits, etc., the giving of the gifts, it comes from, I suppose, that early Celtic time, but then the name comes from the Christian influence, and we've sort of merged it all. Is that right?
Yep, that's absolutely true. And it gets even more confusing because, you know, a lot of Christians are not Roman Catholic, and this is where these particular traditions come from. The day after All Hallows or All Saints is All Souls, which is the celebration of all of the dead, those not just those who are especially holy and become saints. And, of course, that gives us the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, in Mexico and other places in Central and South America, where people go to the graves of their relatives and tend them and also eat picnic lunches there and pour drinks into the ground for the dead members of their family.
That's fascinating. We're chatting with Professor Carol Cusack from the University of Sydney, exploring what Halloween really means for us. Carol, how much of what we do today, and one thing in particular I'd like to know, is carving pumpkins. Where did that come into it? Where's the pumpkin come in?
Well, the interesting thing is that that's an authentic Irish and Scottish tradition, making what's called the jack-o'-lantern. And there actually was a folk tale about an evil, bad-tempered old man called Jack who kept cheating the devil of his soul. He was just a very clever man. Mm. So the devil would come and say, it's time to die. And Jack would say, no, I don't think so. Or actually, he'd say, look, I don't mind coming to hell with you, but would you go up the tree there and get me an apple? I'd like to eat an apple before I die. And this is sort of interesting superstition as well that a lot of people nowadays also wouldn't know. But the minute the devil said, oh, sure, and climbed the tree to get the apple, he carved a cross on the trunk and then the devil couldn't come down. And eventually, he's outside hell at one point, and this is how the jack-o'-lantern becomes a thing. He's got a turnip that he's hollowed out. And the devil gets really pissed off with him because he's being cheated out of Jack's soul all the time. And he hurls a hot coal at him and he catches the coal in the turnip and it makes a little lantern.
Wow.
So what happens with the pumpkins is that the Irish and the Scots go to America in the 1840s, especially from Ireland, because of the potato famine, and they discover that there's this thing called the pumpkin. And A, it's much, much bigger than a turnip. B, it tastes nicer. And C, it's a hell of a lot easier to carve. And so we end up with pumpkins as the vegetable for Halloween.
But it'd be fine to get a turnip and put a candle in it
if
as well.
Really fancy carving a turnip. You know, you'd be being very authentic.
I don't know if I could do it, but I'm happy to give it a go. Do you think our warmer climate here and I suppose the culture of the community have changed the feel of the celebration even more?
Oh, yes. Look, I was at Harvard last year when Halloween came around, and it was really something to be in Massachusetts with the beautiful autumn leaves and the pumpkins absolutely everywhere in giant heaps in the supermarkets and people putting them out on their verandas and very kind of folksy feeling like you were actually right in the middle of something that was quite a major celebration. Here in Australia, I think it's a very minor thing, and it sort of fits for two groups. And the first group is primary school children because, you know, parents take their kids out. They're usually little kids.
Oh, it's so much fun as a kid too.
Witches and ghosts and wearing skeleton onesies, you know, that kind of thing. And then by the time kids are in high school, they generally think it's pretty naff and don't want to do it. And then when you get over 18 and you can go clubbing at the pubs, there are themed events at clubs and pubs that attract, you know, adults, younger adults. It's just a giant capitalist thing, really, isn't it? Because, you know, there are all these little pop-up shops just full of witches' costumes and skeleton onesies and pumpkins and those terrible cobwebs that catch our poor birds.
Oh, I know. They're terrible. And you're right. It is. And I have to admit, I've been guilty of this, of saying, you know what, Halloween is an American thing. It's a retail thing. I didn't know the story. But now that I know the story, I feel like it's got a bit more respect. And I kind of like it.
Well, I like festivals generally. Mm. I think they're good for the community. Mm. And it's interesting. I was giving a lecture today online in the morning, and it was about Shinto culture in Japan. And the Matsuri, the festivals there, they're like really the glue, the cement that keeps society together. And people who aren't religious still take part in them, because it's that you dress up in your kimono and you go to shrine with offerings and you see the beautiful cherry blossoms and everyone is happy. And I think that Halloween as a sort of entertainment for small children is kind of sweet, really.
And so much
but
fun.
The commercialization and the fact that most of the stuff that's produced for it isn't biodegradable, so it's kind of landfill, does make me feel some distress about it.
I have to agree with you there. I feel like we sort of almost need to meet halfway and say, okay, let's celebrate Halloween and embrace it. But go back to the things that, like, we used to do, get an old sheet and cut the eyes out and get a pumpkin and carve it out, put a candle in it and ditch the plastic and the cobwebs. I reckon,
you know,
let's go
that's
back.
So interesting. Some of my colleagues in America last year were telling me what it was like when they were children. And one particular colleague, very valuable colleague, I love her very much, who's 76, talked about how, you know, you used to make your costumes at home with mum helping you or your dad, and you would have those sorts of little games like bobbing for apples. I don't know if people know about that. You know, where you put apples in a bucket and kids aren't allowed to use their hands. They've got to bend down and bite the apple and lift it out of the bucket. It's quite hard to do. But she was saying, basically, it used to be a very homely sort of thing that families did together. And that's not so much so now because of the more commercial kind of approach.
Well, Carol, this has been fascinating. And I feel like, you know, we're bringing Halloween back to what it should be. So great to have this conversation. Thank you for sharing the story with us.
Well, it's been lovely to talk with you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. That's Professor Carol Cusack, Professor of Religious Studies at the University of Sydney. What an interesting story.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.